Good morning. As a preacher, I like to have a direction of where I'm going with my thoughts and my sermon for the week. But then there's those times that life happens and it changes your thoughts. And that's sort of what has happened with me this week. I was thinking about it, you know, it may be in some ways, and maybe this isn't the best way to describe it, but sometimes you just go through life. As in, you're in a routine, and you go to work, or you go to school, you just do the normal things of life. But then there are some other times where you experience life. And that is that something, maybe some great thing happens to you, and you're way up here. Or something terrible happens to you, and you're way down here. You're experiencing life. As I was thinking about that, I thought about the passage that has just been read for us, and especially verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 10. And depending on where you are, whether maybe you're way up here this morning, maybe things are just going great for you, and I hope that for everybody here this morning that it's just going great for you. But probably the odds are that there are some of us who are way down here, or maybe in the middle. But we look at that verse maybe in two different ways. If things are going well for us, we look at it and we say, you know, I am so thankful that God is with me, and He is so faithful. He's not going to let me be tempted beyond what I'm able. But if you're down in the depths, you're looking at that verse a whole different way. Because you're looking at it because of what you're going through, you're looking at it going, Lord, how much more can I take? I mean, you've told me that you're not going to tempt me beyond what I'm able, but Lord, I never knew it was going to be this tough. So what do we do when we find ourselves in these circumstances? I'd like to share with you a passage of Scripture this morning, and that's in 1 Kings 19. Because Elijah is a man who experienced what we might say the high of highs and the low of lows in a matter of days. To give you just a little bit of background before we get into chapter 19, Elijah comes on the scene and he goes to Ahab. Ahab, the king of Israel. And there's Ahab and Jezebel. And Jezebel has brought in this Baal worship. And so Elijah comes to Ahab and through the instruction of God says, guess what? There's not going to be any rain for a period of time until I say it's going to rain again. And God tells Elijah then, leave. He goes to the brook Cherith and he stays there for a while. The brook dries up and he goes to the widow of Zarephath. All this time, Ahab is looking for Elijah. Elijah's a wanted man. Time goes by, over 3 years go by, and God tells Elijah, okay, it's time to go back. You go to Ahab. And he does, and he gives word to him, and he says, let's assemble on Mount Carmel. And let's have, if you will, a contest. Let's really see who is the true God. And so the prophets of Baal are there, and they go ahead and they build their altar. And they pray to Baal, saying, you know, bring down fire to show that you're this true God. But it doesn't work. They're cutting themselves. They're doing all sorts of things. And Elijah's over there. It's almost a sort of a comic thing. Elijah's, is your God on vacation? You know, where is he? Is he asleep? But then the time comes for Elijah to show God for who he truly is. And he prays, and God comes down with fire that doesn't consume just the offering, but it consumes the wood, the stones, and if you'll remember, he dug the trench around it, and he dumped so much water on it. God consumed it all. And we see that the people turn back to God. The prophets, the prophets of Baal are killed. And in that moment, I think we could probably say Elijah is on a high. I mean, a supernatural thing has just occurred to show God to be the true Jehovah. Elijah is a man in life. And he's a man with, at that moment, everything is going right. He goes then and he prays as God directs him. And he prays and rain happens after 3.5 years. And it's an interesting thing that then happens because he tells Ahab, "Hey Ahab, you better go ahead and go because it's about to storm." But then it says in chapter 18 and verse 46, the last verse there, "Then the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he girded up his loins and out ran Ahab to Jezreel." Jezreel is the capital at this time. This is where Ahab and Jezebel are staying. Now think about this. Elijah, his circumstances haven't changed. He's still a wanted man. Why in the world would he go to the capital city where he's wanted? Well, I can come up with maybe two possibilities. One is that Elijah is thinking, you know, God has been shown to be the true God, so Ahab and Jezebel, they're going to change. They're going to accept God as the true God, and that's what's they're going to start following God. That's one possibility that he might be thinking. The second possibility is he's thinking, well, you know, everybody else has seen God. They recognize who he is now. They're going to overthrow Ahab and Jezebel. And it's going to be what God has desired, worshiping and honoring him. That's where we pick up in chapter 19. It says in verse 1, "Now Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, 'So may the gods do to me and even more if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time.' He was afraid and arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, 'It is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not better than my father's.'" Do you see Elijah? Man, I like Elijah because he's one of us. He is way up here. He's riding high because of what God has shown himself to do. And in a matter of a day, maybe, he's down in the dumps. He's a man without hope because Jezebel says, "If I don't kill you, then may the gods kill me by this time tomorrow." Elijah flees. He runs for his life. And you see, he is a man who begins to just give up hope. Think about what he does. He gets to Beersheba and he leaves his servant. Why would he do that? Well, he's just saying, "I'm giving up." His servant was there to help him in the things that he was doing for God, and he just now says, "Look, go on, because it's over." And he comes and he finds himself in the wilderness, sitting there under the shade of a juniper tree, and he says, "Lord, I'm done." He's a man with no hope. God didn't design us to be people without hope. He meant for us to have hope, to cling to something that says there's something better. Elijah had lost that. He's at that point where he is, we might say he's thinking about suicide. But he recognizes he doesn't have the right to do that. So he says, God, take my life. Just please, Lord, just take it. He says, I'm no better than my fathers. He thought that, you know, maybe he could improve from where Israel was before. You know, maybe he could help bring them back to God. But he says, I'm no better. And he's down in the dumps. He's discouraged like maybe he's never been before to say, kill me, Lord. Just kill me. I want you to see this morning how God deals with Elijah. Because it goes back to that verse in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13 of God being this faithful God. We see that God is with him. Beginning in verse 5, and he lay down and slept under a juniper tree, and behold, there was an angel touching him. And he said to him, arise, eat. Then he looked, and behold, there was at his head a bread cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise, eat, because the journey is too great for you. So he arose and ate and drank. And he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. I want you to see how God deals with Elijah. He first and foremost provides for Elijah physically. When somebody is in the depths of despair, sometimes the very first place you begin is with physical things. Elijah, it's such an interesting interaction here, because God sends an angel. Do you notice, though, Elijah's reaction? It's almost like he wakes up. Oh, okay, yeah, there's food. I'll eat, I'll drink, and I'll go back to sleep. He sees an angel. And when we see in all of these other times where people see the angel, they're in fear. And yet here's Elijah, and I think because he is so overwhelmed with grief, with sorrow, that he just can't get himself out of that. But it's interesting how God works with Elijah. The angel doesn't say to him, Elijah, where's your faith? What's wrong with you, Elijah? Get up. You can do better than this. The angel cooks for Elijah. He provides food for him. And he doesn't do it just once, but he wakes him up again and says, hey, you need to eat more. God knew the limitations of Elijah. He knew that it wasn't enough. He says, you've got to eat more because you've got a journey in front of you. That's how God works with us. He knows that we are physical people. He knows that sometimes we just need physical things to help us. You know, maybe it is when you're just down in the dumps, maybe you just need your favorite meal. Maybe you need just to get away to your favorite place. God is there with us, and he's working through all of these different things to help us. He doesn't just provide food, but he also provides protection. Because Elijah that now goes 40 days and 40 nights to the mountain of Horeb. That must have been some supernatural food. I wonder, and I don't know, but I wonder how it tasted. God preparing it. Man, that maybe that tasted really, really, really good. But he goes in that in the strength of that food, 40 days and 40 nights, to this mountain of Horeb. God is providing protection. He's taking him away from the threats. And he brings him to his mountain. Horeb is not a mountain that we know that well, but maybe you might know it better by its other name, Sinai. Elijah goes to Sinai. Know anybody else who was at Sinai? Moses and the children of Israel. Notice what happens when he's there. In verse 9, it says, "Then he came there to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And he said to him, 'I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. The sons of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, torn down thine altars, and killed thy prophets with the sword. And I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away.'" God now deals or provides for Elijah emotionally. He comes to the mountain and he comes to a cave. And notice what God says. "Elijah, what are you doing here?" When God asks questions, it's not for informational purposes. It's not that he's saying, "Elijah, I didn't know that you were coming. Why are you here?" He always asks questions to probe or to help the person. He did it with Adam and Eve. "Where are you, Adam? Who told you you were naked?" These are all questions to get us thinking, to help us understand where we are. And what God does here is he asks the question and he listens. Notice what Elijah says. "I'm alone, O Lord. I've been very zealous for you. I've done your work, but it hasn't amounted to much of anything because I'm the only one." God listens. Sometimes when we are discouraged, that's what we need. We just need somebody to listen to us. Somebody to not try to fix the problem. Somebody to just say, "Here I am. I want you to know I'm right here for you." That's what God does for Elijah. He listens. And he's going to continue to listen because Elijah in verse 14 is going to say the same thing again. God's patient. But notice then, what happens next? We see that God responds, beginning in verse 11. And he said, "Go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great and strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after a fire, a sound of a gentle blowing, or a still small voice. And it came about when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle, and he went out and stood in the entrance of the cave, and behold, a voice came to him and said, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' And he said, 'I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the sons of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, torn down thine altars, and killed thy prophets with the sword, and I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away.'" God says something here that's very interesting. He tells him, "Elijah, I want you to go out to the mountain. Go forth and stand on this mountain." And he says, "I'm going to pass by." God uses that term a couple of times. He used the term with Moses. when Moses was there on Sinai, and some scholars have said, you know, it's possible that Elijah is in the same place as Moses. We don't know that. But he is in the same area, at least. And God was going to pass by Moses. He was going to reveal his glory. We see this another time with Jesus. His disciples are out on the boat, and he's been praying all night. And it says that he was going to come to them, and he was going to pass by. It is to reveal his glory. Well, God is saying this to Elijah. He's saying, look, I'm going to reveal myself to you. But notice how he does it. Because it says here that God is not in the wind, the earthquake, or the fire. And what does that mean? Does that mean that God didn't send them? No, God sent them. And if you think about it, God has revealed himself in those ways many times before. When the apostles were there in the upper room on the day of Pentecost, what was it? It was the sound of a great rushing wind. When Israel came to Mount Sinai that first time and God descended down upon the mountain, there was the earthquake. And along with it, there was fire and all sorts of smoke and lightning and thundering, all sorts of stuff. And how did he come to Moses at the burning bush? In fire. God comes in all of these different other ways. God could have come to Elijah in those ways, but he didn't. Why? Because God knew Elijah needed something different. He came in a still, small voice. He's dealt with Elijah physically. He's dealt with him emotionally. And now he's coming and he's providing for Elijah spiritually. You see, Elijah was thinking, Lord, I've been zealous for you. He was thinking, Lord, I've stuck to the plan. You revealed yourself in this great, wonderful way. And it didn't work. Lord, nothing works now. And that's what he says, just kill me. Because he was holding to what he thought was the plan. And God is saying here, Elijah, I've come in many different ways before. But you're trying to put me in a box. You're trying to make it so that you think you know exactly what's going to happen. And he says, it's not about that. He came in what Elijah needed for the moment. Elijah needed to hear the voice of God. When we're down in the dumps, that's what we need. Think about this. Elijah spent time alone with God. Just the two of them. And God was speaking to him. When you're down in the dumps, when you think nobody else cares, when you're searching, maybe you're at that point where you're saying, I've given up hope. God says, I'm still there. God says, I want you to listen to me. Because I won't leave you. Notice what happens next. Beginning in verse 15, it says, and the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you have arrived, you shall anoint Hazael king over Aram. And Jehu the son of Nimshi you shall anoint king over Israel. And Elisha the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah you shall anoint as prophet in your place. And it shall come about, the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael, Jehu shall put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha shall put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. God knew what Elijah needed. He knew exactly what things to say. He said he knew exactly where to start. As we said before, he didn't start with the spiritual things saying, Elijah, where's your faith? Come on, what's going on with you? He started with the physical. And he built him up from there. Even when Elijah couldn't see what he needed, God knew. And he used different ways and different means to accomplish that. He's going to tell Elijah, Elijah, I want you to go anoint these men as king. These men, some of them were godly men. Others, we see that they weren't so godly. But God is saying, I'm going to use them. It may not be the way that you think it's going to bring about, but I'm going to bring about my will in whatever means that I want. So don't put me in a box, Elijah. And what he says is, now you need to go forward. Now you need to get up and see that there's hope. Because I am the God of hope. Now you need to get up and go serve. Because I have great things still to do. Maybe you're someone down in the dumps this morning. And you're saying, what's the hope? What's the use? God says, there's still hope because I am. I am the God. I am the God. I am the only God. And you are my creation. God is there with us. He is there for us. And that's what he tries and he shows. He doesn't just try, but he shows that to Elijah. To say, you can go on now. I want to call your attention as we bring things to a close to the article that is in the bulletin this morning. And Gary Henry says a lot of things in that article, but he says one thing I want that's at the end of the article. And he says, let me tell you, deciding to go forward when you're discouraged is as fine a thing as you'll ever do. You might be discouraged this morning. God's saying, keep on. I'm right there every step of the way. I am the faithful God who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but I'll provide the way of escape. As we close, I want to take you back to Elijah for one more thing. When the great wind was ripping the rocks apart, when the earthquake was shaking the mountain, when the fire was blazing outside, why was Elijah not affected? Why was he not harmed? Because if you remember, it says he went forth only when it was a still small voice. It's because he was in a cave or a cleft. And he was protected by the rock. The rock was the one who was taking the brute force of the wind and the earthquake and the fire. You see, we have a rock. Jesus Christ. He took the brute force of our sins upon himself. And he died on a cross. So that you and I could have life. So that you and I could have hope. hope beyond this world, hope that transcends this life to something greater, to something better. And that rock is there for anyone and everyone. Do you have him this morning? Do you need him? We all need him. We all need that hope. His invitation is open. Won't you come as together we stand and sing?